Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ah, the Red Scare. The classic move, Gorbachev. Opening up lava pits in Wisconsin.
My name is Peter O'Donohue, and I'm a podcaster. I research and present other people's work over the internet with my co-hosts, Ethan Palmer and James Miller. The show is called Lore Boys, and it's the number one fake history podcast on the internet. This is the story behind the AWE universe by Remedy Games, with a focus on Alan Wake and Control. However, Quantum Break is relevant as well.
I like how your Canadian snuck in on that behind there. That was a good one.
My name is Ethan Palmer. I'm a professional swiffle ball bat player. I'm here to present to you my take on Pete's episode of Control.
Something A&E. AWE.
Something A&E television. I don't know.
Yeah, we're doing Extreme Home Makeover.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Or My Strange Addiction. That lady that eats her couch.
You're thinking of, are those on A&E?
You're 34 and counting, where you just have lots and lots of children.
Yeah, it's hard having children.
There's a lot of kids.
It's the hardest thing on earth to do, because you have to have sex with a woman, which is difficult.
Oh, yeah.
It's challenging in its own way. I've never done it, so I wouldn't know.
So we're going to be doing... I got attacked by a kitten. We're going to be doing the AWE universe, like I said, by Remedy Games. So are you guys familiar with Remedy and any of their games? I suppose starting with Jambo.
I know that you played Control, and I know that Alan Wake is in it, but I haven't really played any of them.
Okay. Ethan?
Yeah, about same. About the same amount.
Have you guys played Max Payne?
Oh,
yes. Maybe. I played
they
a
created
lot.
Max Payne.
I played a lot of 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
One and 2. I haven't played a lot of 3.
I like 3 a lot. It's actually the only one I played.
It was good. I didn't have any of them, but my buddy had 1 and 2. So I would play 1 and 2 a lot.
They're like really similar to Duke Nukem, right?
No. It's like a third-person shooter. It's more like, I guess more like GTA than anything, but like you pop painkillers and you can like slow down time by popping painkillers.
I didn't play then. I played Duke Nukem.
Bullet time and painkillers are unrelated.
Yeah. It's a lot like the Matrix Reloaded video game, if you ever played
it. Exactly. It is a lot like that. Okay. Just a quick little recap of the dev. Remedy is a Finnish developer, as in they Finnish games. They're actually located in Texas. Stupid.
Is it true though? Sorry, where are they from?
They're from Finland.
Okay.
They're in like oh my god, it's a stupid name. It's like Respu or Ozpu in Finland or something like that.
Okay.
Jamie, pull up the clip. And despite their low budgets and sometimes their soft sales, they still maintain a really good reputation. And thankfully, with their kind of more conservative European style game budgets, they're still in operation and they were founded in 1995. So they're not as critically like reliant on sales figures like EA might be, where they'll just like kill a studio in 15 seconds if they don't make their budget back, because they know how to spend their money. And they've been the same or a similar team for a long time, so their producers and everybody's really good at kind of organizing things. Unlike CD Projekt, another European developer who I don't think could organize their way out of a fucking wet paper bag.
They're from Espoo.
Espoo, excuse me. Ozpoo was closed.
Espoo, Finland. Well, I agree to disagree.
Yeah. I was one vowel off.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, kind of an important vowel.
I took a wrong turn at Ozpoo and ended up at Ozpoo. So they also, like we said, created Max Payne, who is one of the most recognizable video game characters to ever be ruined by Mark Wahlberg.
Was there a Max Payne movie?
Oh, yeah.
Have I seen it?
I hope not. I mean, I haven't. I heard it sucked dicks. It's just
2008.
We're pulling up a lot of clips for this early in the podcast.
We're front-loading the JV pull-up the clips.
Yeah. You can watch it now for $5 on YouTube.
You can probably get the game for $5 on GOG.
I don't think I have seen it.
I'm going to checkmark watched it on my Google search here to throw off the algorithm because I've never seen it.
Nice. Got him.
Now they might threaten us with a sequel if they needed one more guy to watch it.
Yeah, yeah. Just one guy sitting in a room with like a little ticker since 2008 waiting for it to go from like $9.99 to $1,000.
All right, we're good for the script there, Mark.
We're green-lighted. Yeah. Got Mark Wahlberg on the phone.
16% on Rotten Tomatoes in a 5.4 out of 10.
That's bad.
16% out of what?
Well, usually percent means per 1,000, right?
Yeah, something like that.
So the connective tissue here for what we'll refer to as the AWE universe is the Federal Bureau of Control, and it is located at 33 Thomas Street in Manhattan, New York. New York, New York. It's a hell of a town.
Hell of a town.
This is a real address that you can Google. It's nothing interesting, is there? It's just a different skyscraper. AWE originally was speculated to stand for Alan Wake Experience.
Okay.
I thought when you said AW, I was like, Alan Wake something. It's got to be, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, so, Pete, you're laughing like that's completely impossible, but I have no idea who Alan Wake is, so maybe he's like a god figure, like the G-Man in this. Like,
oh, that's true.
As far as I'm concerned, it could be, and I don't see why not.
The beginning of this is going to make a lot more sense if you re-listen to the episode, actually.
Okay, I'll just start at the end right now. So I'll just jump to the end of your script that you've provided me, and I'll start reading my lines from the end.
So the Federal Bureau of Control, or FBC, like I said, is located in New York right now. And when the FBC was actually founded, it is unknown, but it is said to have been like a young organization in 1954. It was just a hip, young, trendy government organization, and the world was its oyster.
Okay.
Yeah. So a steady gal pal, keys to a convertible, all that good shit back in the 50s.
So Lore Boys Prime today is we need jars of ancient honey. So if you've delved into any Egyptian tombs recently and have sealed jars of honey, send those our way. And that's going to make sense based on this episode when we get there. I'm sure. Yeah. Right, Pete?
At the end, right?
Right, Pete?
Absolutely.
Okay. So they're just a run-of-the-mill government organization, you were saying.
For the moment. Originally, like at least in the 50s, they were headquartered in Washington, D.C., with the other FBs that operate out of that area. You know, the FB A through Z, basically. Yeah, okay. Yeah. All the government organizations. When you get elected president, that's what they give you. They just give you an FB A through Z. It's well, here are all the guys you need to talk to.
Yeah. The FBW, the friend benefits with. Right?
Yeah. that's the different people that you get to have affairs with.
Yeah. FBE, full body experience. It's not an out of body experience. It's just when you feel like you're in a body.
That's a really good, or a really good massage.
full body experience.
Yeah. Or like, you can know if someone's poor or not. You know if someone's poor or not in VR if they have the full body experience or just their head's moving.
Oh, yeah, right.
Oh, yeah. There you go. That's how they get you. That's actually a government plant in VR. with all those perverts.
Well, you know, you can always see the people who are playing like with their TV or with their computer and not with the headset because they just walk the same way and they're either like this, like completely boxy, or like crouched over. But then the full body ones, the anime girls dancing around, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a full body experience for everyone involved.
So while they were headquartered in Washington, in D.C., by 1954, they had already managed to contain and find three what are called altered items.
Oh, it's kind of like SCP.
It's a lot like the SCP. Altered items are everyday objects that have been touched by or contaminated by during, like by some force during what is called an AWE, or an altered world event.
Okay.
Some ghosts had put their hands in a bunch of pots of honey and touched a bunch of things, and that's why they're all contaminated now, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so the contaminated honey will come back. It's one of the AIs, one of the altered items.
Okay, all right.
So altered world events are when paranatural forces slip through into our perceived reality. There's a bunch of spheres basically out there rattling around, and once in a while there's a conjunction thereof.
You mean flat planets, right?
A bunch of flat planets zipping around, exactly. Yeah. And then sometimes they ricochet into each other like Beyblades, but if Beyblades were flat.
Oh, so it's like The Witcher.
It's a lot like that, yeah. It's a bunch of universes kind of rattling around, and sometimes they intersect, and that's when we get an AWE, an altered world event.
Conjunction of the spheres.
Exactly. And sometimes you can get some, like, ghost residue or whatever, and it'll latch itself onto an actual item. And it only latches onto an item that is, like, familiar to the collective human psychology. So you can get, like, a rubber ducky or a garden flamingo or a traffic light, stuff like that. And some
of your dad's penis that you totally wish you had.
Yeah. that's something that's very relatable to the collective human psyche, right?
Yeah.
That's what Freud said, right?
Yeah.
The big thing about the AWs is they're very much about psychology, so they're all about Freud.
Yeah. Either of you got a cigar? I could really go for one right now. Don't know why.
We could inject some cocaine and smoke cigars.
Dude.
AWEs, since they kind of latch on to familiar items, for some reason, these extra dimensional forces are like concerned whether like the dumb human monkey could even understand it. Like, it's like, well, if we haunted this traffic light and didn't play red light, green light, where the floor would then kill you, it wouldn't make any sense now, would it? Like, well, no, of course not.
Okay.
It's like the entire dimension took like some creative writing courses and just like thought they were way smarter than they actually were, basically.
Okay. Now, just like us, so, right?
Between 1954 and 58, the Bureau had already investigated and helped hide and obviously cover up three AWEs at this point. However, they were not really documented properly, so we don't really know what they were. They kind of exist in like the FBC's GarageBand days. It's like these old jams that they had with their buddies that like, oh, they could just never recapture sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. What does A&W stand for? The hamburger store there.
Altered World.
Altered World, is that it?
Okay. It's Angus and Wegula, because you can get an Angus burger or a Wegula burger.
I thought that was going to be a real thing.
Because Angus could at least be a person's name. You had me running there for a second. Wegula.
What kind of burger would you like, my friend? Regular burger, please.
Wegula. With the root beer.
Yeah.
I'd like a Papa burger, and then they hand you like a pack of cigarettes, and it's like, this is all we had, and then they tell you to leave. The earliest recorded AWE is called AWE-3, and it took place in Sawyer County, Wisconsin, which is also a real place. Yes.
Are we doing the thing that I was doing where we go from the end of the script? What happened to -1 and -2 if it's the first recorded?
Between 54 and 58, they had already dealt with some shit that was not recorded, which is the thing that I said before we went off on the burger thing.
Okay, okay. So they didn't like retroactively number those. They just said like, no, we're never going to write them down, but we're just going to start at 3.
Or they just don't have the documentation anymore.
Okay. Fair. They're like, we know there was
perfect at writing things down. You
we know?
Know
there was two.
But yeah. At least. Right?
I figured it might be like hey, they're still redacted or something like that, but
no, they're just unknown at this point.
So they say redacted, by the way.
Oh yeah, sorry. Yeah. What did I say?
AWE-3 took place in Sawyer County, Wisconsin. which is a real place.
Okay.
I Googled that as well. Sawyer County is a real place in Wisconsin, which is a real place In some country I've never heard of.
Okay. Is it just as boring as whatever New York, New York?
I'd imagine so.
Okay. Yeah. Anything in Wisconsin is bound to be
Wisconsin
boring.
Wisconsin probably has less Broadway sailors. But otherwise, I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, probably less. I don't think they have a big navy, Wisconsin.
I think it's in the middle of the country. I don't really know. Yeah.
Are they on one of the lakes? They might be. I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah. So officially, this AWE was titled the Meteor Hill AWE. This took place when some gigantic fucking nerds in the Youth Science League were out drying up pussies and being unbullied.
Uh-huh. Dude, this could also be an A&W thing. Our hill is meatier than yours.
A&W, Meteor Hill.
Yeah.
It's more of an Arby's thing.
You don't mean like meat, though, do you?
No.
I mean meteor as in the space rock.
Meteor.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not Meteor Hill, as though they had some undocumented meaty but not remarkably meaty AWE to deal with, so they called this one the Meteor AWE. Like they went on a sliding scale of meat at first, and that's why it's not documented anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Sliding scale of meat is a gross phrase, man.
Well, I mean, okay, so you start with your I guess fish would be like the lightest end of that scale, right? Then all the way down to human flesh is probably the other end of that scale.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Is there something would I eat a human before something else? I don't know.
You said my sentence was fucked up.
Yeah, I don't know. Off the top of my head, I can't think of anything more appalling than the thought of
human flesh. Yeah.
More unappetizing. As a vegetarian, I can't think of much, but...
So these nerds were out in the desert doing their nerd science in the 50s, avoiding bullies, and some dimension out there figured that it would start doling out the wedgies, the wet willies, and the most classic prank of all, which was opening up three gigantic sinkholes filled with a magma-like substance.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's like a Final Fantasy move.
I thought about it. I don't think I could eat human. Like, I think that's the last thing I would eat too.
Okay.
Just to make good. It clear.
Thanks.
I was trying to think of a more gross animal because, you know, there's a lot of icky, creepy crawlies out there, but
some animals are straight up poisonous to consume.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like eating human is probably poison to the soul, right?
Yeah. And the brain gives you like a similar, it makes you go crazy. It gives you the shakes, I think.
Yeah. It's like mad cow, right?
Cannibalism's bad for you.
Yeah, if you get a good dry rub, it's not so bad, I heard, though.
Yeah.
Well, I do have a decent dry rub. Now you're trying to convince me otherwise, eh?
Yeah. I know Pete doesn't like liver, but what about human liver, huh? So.
Nah. No. This doesn't make a bad thing worse. So once these sinkholes opened up, some of the boys were hurt. None of them were killed. However, they were taken in by the Bureau for treatment a week later, along with some samples of the magma-like substance. So they don't know what it was.
Can I just say, it's a miracle that a group of young boys, because young boys can be kind of reckless, right?
Notoriously rowdy.
The fact that a group of young boys survived a bunch of pits of magma opening up, like just like with like few injuries, like they just like get brought to this like strange organization instead of a hospital and put on life support. Like that's a miracle. So
it's not excellently documented. I don't know how many of these kids were like horribly burned by this substance. Like,
I'm willing to say little miracles. No deaths. That's a miracle right there.
No deaths is all we really know from this time in the 50s.
And that's pretty good.
So the FBC then basically took these boys to their headquarters in Washington, took care of them, healed them, let them go. It wasn't like some weird child abduction scheme or whatever. It was just like, hey, we can treat you for your extra-dimensional, your paranormal radiation poisoning.
How did you make the magma holes appear? What did you do?
Yeah.
Talk, you commie bastard.
Ah, the Red Scare. The classic move, Gorbachev. Opening up lava pits in Wisconsin. The area was then just sealed off from the public for their own safety because they didn't really know how to get rid of these pits. At this time, the FBC was led by a man named Theodore Ash Sr., up until 1964, where he died of unknown causes. Possible exposure to spooky extra-dimensional bullshit, but who knows?
He's a cool name.
Theodore Ash. Ted Ash, baby.
Yeah. Teddy Ash.
Teddy Ash.
Yeah.
Hey, a week later.
I'll her Ted Urash. Huh?
Hey, yo.
A week after he had died, multiple AWEs were discovered taking place in the subway tunnels below New York City, likely making them safer, honestly. And the FBC was called in to clear them out and let the mob continue safely burying the bodies of uncorrupted union bosses. Anybody they couldn't bribe, they were just like, there's some spookies happenings down here, and all these rolled up carpets that we need to safely dispose of, just can't, it can't be done. So they call the government for help.
Yeah. Hey, I know we don't always see eye to eye, but could you do me a solid?
Thankfully, they had a couple of people in the FBC who were willing to do them a solid. The newly appointed, like, acting head, because he hadn't been officially put in place yet, the acting head of the FBC now is a man named Broderick Northmore, which is another great name.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know what they did. They just made all the people they want to disappear. They lock them in a movie theater and make them watch Max Payne on loop until the problem solves itself.
Yeah, exactly.
A different AWE managed to pull that film from the future to eternally torture people from... Yeah, exactly.
Perfect.
And the acting head of research was Ted Ash Jr. So Theodore Ash Jr. was head of research for the FBC, while the actual acting head was Broderick Northmore.
Brody.
Brody. Hey, Brody.
Brodacious, bro.
These two men and their team went into the subway tunnels and discovered the entrance to the oldest house, which at this time decided to allow the agents of the SBC to FBC to see it and go inside. Whoa. However, where the oldest house actually came from is totally unknown.
It smells like mothballs, and there's doilies everywhere. Yeah.
There's one bowl of candy that is so stuck to the inside of the bowl that if you manage to snap off one of the peppermints, the entire planet would fall to pieces.
But the catches are great. The catches are great because they're preserved in plastic.
Covered in plastic. Dude, the couches have been contained safely prior to the FBC showing up. The oldest house appears as a huge, featureless, windowless skyscraper down in Manhattan, and it cannot be seen or interacted with by the public. The architecture is described as brutalist. This term was coined by a Swedish architect named Hans Goethe. And this is actually really cool when I was looking this up. A real-world example of brutalism, you can Google Habitat 67 right here in Montreal.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm familiar with Goethe and his brutalism designs. Not a huge fan. Habitat 67 is one of the cooler ones, I would say.
Yeah.
It looks like someone who just started playing Minecraft and didn't want to stick to like a cube was just kind of like squares in everywhere.
Adding rooms to the side of rooms.
Yeah.
Yeah, Habitat 67 is neat. The art direction in of the oldest house is fucking awesome in the game. But I've like real world examples are basically just like, what if you put a couple of windows in a concrete pillar is like the most common one. So yeah, exactly. It's not great.
Yeah.
The oldest house seems to allow people to see it and enter it for its own reasons. The hallways and the rooms are constantly shifting. There is an apparent infinite amount of space and rooms to build and kind of work in within the oldest house. Because the building seems to be connected directly to the astral plane, which is an alternate dimension and a source of paranatural power.
Cool.
Yeah. A few other locations on Earth are also connected to the astral plane, and they're all known as places of power.
Nice, dude. Get your free skill from Witcher 3.
From The Witcher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got to upgrade Quen, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got to get that bubble shield. As the FBC continued to explore, they eventually discovered the foundation of the house in the caverns below the building. The foundation is the only place in the entire oldest house that is not constantly shifting. It seems to be some fixed point between our reality and the astral plane. This may be due to an object that people just call the nail. It is a massive monolith with a V-shaped cut in the top. And not unlike Idris Elba, the nail is described as being black and mathematically perfect.
Oh, okay.
All right, that's cool.
I won't disagree with you there.
It's a handsome fella. It seems to hold the foundation in place. So the nail itself seems to anchor the entire dimension, I guess.
I mean, so every building has an anchor nail. There's one nail that holds the whole building together.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Huh. Yeah, dude, if you just run around with a big enough magnet, you could make cities topple.
Well, yeah, you got to hit that one nail just right. But yeah.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to pull it, like, if you don't want to be on the other side of the nail. If the point is facing you, then you're just going to sink it in deeper. That building's not going to go down, right? You got to get on the side with the head to pull it out with your magnet.
Okay.
Yeah, the FBC went down there into the foundation, armed with all the stud detectors that the 50s could provide.
Yeah.
But they're all like middle-aged men, so they're all pointing at themselves like, hey, I found one.
It's like Council of Dad jokes.
Yeah, exactly.
During an expedition near the foundation, Northmore discovered an object of power on a pedestal in front of the nail. I'll explain this shortly, what an object of power is.
The nail kind of seems like an object of power itself, no?
It's not classified as such. It's because it's kind of part of the building.
Okay.
It's unknown what it really does. All we know is, like, we do know from playing the game Control that it is connected to the astral plane. But it's not fully explained, and at this time in the 50s, in 1958, when they're just discovering this shit, they didn't even really have the term.
Okay, yeah. Object of power. They had the term nail, right?
Nails had been invented prior to 1958, thankfully. Yeah. So
it was like a year and a half, right, that they had
together nails. Anymore.
Yeah. You know, the matches were created after the lighter, and the screws were created after the nail.
There you go.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
Animal fact for the episode?
Yeah.
I didn't actually look into it, but the second one, I know the first one's true. The second one sounds true. I feel like a nail would come before a screw.
So I think it depends how you define screw, but you're probably right, right?
I think you're totally right, because like cave people or like Bronze Age people in the Middle East would have assembled their huts with pegs, which are certainly more akin to it, where it's like a peg is basically just a wooden nail.
Yep. Or it's a great way to pass a Friday night, if you know what I mean.
You guys want it? From constructionmagnet.com.
Good.
Around 1860s, wire nails were introduced, and by early 1900s, 90% of all nails were wire nails. Screws, on the other hand, date back to 3rd century BC in Greece. So it sounds so that's wire nails specifically. That's a specific type of nail, I guess. But I wouldn't be surprised, because if you think of ancient Greece, they didn't have wood buildings. They had stone buildings, right? I don't know how much they were nailing stuff together.
When was Elmer's glue made? Were they gluing these stones together?
That's 4th century BC. It's made of goat hooves.
Yeah, so Wikipedia for hand wrought nail just says prehistory.
Huh.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go.
Older.
So anyway, this object of power is pretty much like one of the most significant discoveries that they had found within the oldest house at this point. He found it on a pedestal in front of the nail. This was peculiar since the FBC had established a base in these caverns already. The pedestal with the object had never been seen before and has never been seen since.
Ooh, okay. Creepy.
Yeah. The object of power is called the service weapon. Throughout history, the weapon has apparently changed dramatically. However, it always retains the form of what is generally accepted to be a weapon by the collective unconscious, making it more of a physical manifestation of a concept, meaning if you could convince enough people, you can probably make it look like pretty much anything.
Cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
The difference between the altered items that we talked about earlier and an object of power, or OOPS, which is... the canon term, was the canon acronym. Is that an OOPS is connected to the astral plane and can transfer its power to a para-utilitarian instead of kind of retaining a residual haunting of astral powers. So an altered item is just kind of like a troublesome little thing that you need to deal with, whereas an object of power confers its astral powers or its paranatural powers onto the user itself. This user needs to be a para-utilitarian, which
could they also be what about American?
Yeah.
No, yeah, no, do they have weapons without a passport?
Do they have to be from like one of those Mexico countries, para utilitaria or whatever it is?
They do need to, like, so Northmore is from Paraguay, which would explain his ease of use with the service weapons.
Nice.
Now, whether this goes to other South American countries is not known. I don't know of any Argentine utilitarians or Brazil utilitarians, but they may be added in future games. Northmore, after being allowed, again, to pick up the service weapon, was presumably transported mentally or physically to the astral plane, which appears as like an infinite void of white light. The only thing in there is an inverted black pyramid in what would be perceived by a human to be the sky, since we kind of distinguish up and down.
Wait.
So there's a big upside down black pyramid within the astral plane. It's the only thing visible.
As the sky, though? Like, that's what I don't get. Like,
is it just like so big that it would look like it goes for a really long time, so it's like the sky, or...
It is huge, but it just appears above you in the astral plane.
So that's like in what you would perceive as the sky.
Yes, exactly. Now,
so if it's a void, can you like reorient so it's like underneath you, or is it just like if you spin, it spins with you?
It's your Sims.
The Sim diamond.
It's always above you. Like the Sims gem, it is always above you.
Yeah.
Okay.
It can manifest different things like within the astral plane, like constructs, which probably is like a gameplay conceit more than anything, but just the astral plane itself by default is an infinite white void with an inverted black pyramid.
Okay.
That occupies this realm.
Cool.
The pyramid communicated with Northmore, revealing that it contained apparently multiple paranatural entities referred to themselves as the board of directors. And then, oh no, we made a mistake. Shut it down. Now, the board of directors in the game, in control in the game, communicates entirely in subtitles, and a lot of what they say is either or. So they do not speak English. It's just kind of like this garbled electronic noise, but the subtitles are always like, you can now fly/hover sort of thing. So they, like, what you interpret from what they're saying is really up to the person that they're speaking to.
Okay.
Yeah, and even reading the subtitles is kind of like...
It's up to the person playing the game, what they're saying.
In canon, because, like, as you scan over the subtitle, you'll grab a couple of words before it disappears and moves on, because they're quite quick.
Okay.
But yeah, so the main thing, it is called the Board of Directors, which is knowledge passed on directly from the pyramid, meaning multiple entities live within it. The way that they talk about themselves as a Board of Directors is probably just because they're communicating with bureaucrats already, yeah. And they're in the same way that the service weapon appears as a gun. It's because we understand what that means.
Yeah, yeah, and a service weapon for a federal bureau, like, makes sense, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So the pyramid communicated with Northmore and then appointed him as the new director of the FBC. So he was acting director up until this point. He gets the... Yeah, it's like, hey, guys, I touched this gun, yeah. And I had a psychic vision, and I'm your boss now. Yeah.
Oh, hey, how's it going? How's it going, Northmore? I think you should refer to me as director. Well, I mean, you're just acting director, right? No. I met with an inverted black pyramid in an infinite white void. I'm director now.
Okay. Did this pyramid have a notary?
Yeah.
Smaller pyramid? Yeah. Something like that?
Was HR in the meeting with you, or was it just you in this pyramid?
He gets a hat made. It's just like a coat hanger with a black pyramid that's always above his head. Yeah. This is my director hat. Yeah.
He thankfully did have a way to prove that something had occurred, because he is the only person who can actually hold the service weapon, and it can transform. So it is very clearly some sort of supernatural relic.
Okay.
So in the game, you only get the one gun, but it can transform into different shapes to represent what you would understand as a different gun. So there is, you know, pistol, sniper, SMG, shotgun, rocket launcher. It transforms to suit what you believe these weapons should act like.
So it's like
banana, super soaker.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Nuclear bomb.
Peeled banana. Yeah, the peeled banana is the final weapon that you get in the game that you can point at enemies.
Laser pointer to get rid of the cats.
Oh, joke gun that just has a flag that says bang on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So how it works, I guess, like, just
plunger on a string.
Yeah. grappling hook, same thing, right? So I guess for, like, the mechanics of the game, does it work like, oh, you don't find new weapons while you're playing? Because, like, in games, you, like, unlock weapons as you go, typically in single-player games, right? Do you just, like, figure out how to tap into the innate ability of your service weapon to...
You unlock the forms. So, yeah, okay. you know, you just played Halo 3 a couple days ago again. Yeah. And you know how, like, over the course of that game, you encounter new... Like, you find new weapons or encounter new enemies with new weapons.
Yeah.
Over the course of Control, your understanding of the service weapon expands as your character progresses, and then you can then upgrade and unlock new forms that do different things. It starts off as a handgun.
Okay.
Yeah. The interesting thing about the service weapon that has apparently existed with it forever, since it pulls directly from the astral plane, it has infinite ammo, but needs to recharge.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So,
like, recharge, like, do you gotta plug it in? Is, like, one of those, like, wireless chargers okay? Can you just, like, leave it, like, on one of those? Or
it's a USB-C.
Has a little crank on it, like...
It does it itself, but if the collective unconscious believed that guns had to be recharged like squeezy flashlights, that would definitely be the way that it worked.
Okay.
Well, the collective conscience, like, now it doesn't even have a headphones jack anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, bullshit.
For the record, I think a squeezy flashlight is called a fleshlight, Peter.
Oh. yeah.
Yeah, both used in a dark room, but different
purposes, I guess. Yeah, I mean, which one do you reach for when the power goes out first?
Depends on your situation, my guy. That's true, right?
I reach for both because I need one for the other, you know?
Yeah.
Gotta be able to see it. Gotta be able to see it. Otherwise, it does
candles
nothing
first,
for me.
Candles first for either the mood or the dull light, and then following that, you go for the rest.
If you get like the ones that are like slightly see through, you can like put the flashlight on the bottom, and then it glows.
Oh, yeah, it's very exciting.
Yeah.
God, could you imagine having like a slightly transparent flashlight? How horrible that would be.
Depends if you like to see it or not,
I guess. Yeah.
It's like a waterbed. You got fish in there or something.
Like those like 70s platform shoes that is just like lacquer and fake gold.
I don't know how to get them out.
Yeah. It's starting to smell. Yeah, it's the fish. It's the fish that's starting to smell.
Yeah, those fish would be way up there on that meat gradient we were talking about earlier.
Way down in the evil section of that one. Yeah. After being appointed by the board of directors and being able to wield the service weapon, he became the first para-utilitarian. This just means that he can take and use powers from the astral plane through objects of power.
Okay.
Cool.
And maybe we'll get to this. Is like his ability to do that bestowed by the board of directors, or is this something that the board of directors chose him because he was innately able to do it? Do you know?
We will get to this, but in brief, because we're going to explain a little bit more. In brief, it is not given by the board of directors.
Okay, he's chosen.
You need to be para-utilitarian before you can wield the service weapon, because if you are not approved to use it, touching it will kill you.
Oh,
yeah.
How many died finding that out, huh?
just like the good break room. If you touch the door handle, you die.
Yeah, yeah.
In a normal company.
Well, it's kind of like the opposite of surgeons, right? Because like to be a surgeon, you have to be able to touch somebody and not kill them.
The board of directors.
I thought you were going to say you need to kill someone to become a surgeon. It might happen. You're probably going to have someone die on the table. So kill this guy right now.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
So
get it out of the way.
Get over it.
Then there's no nerves. You know, it's not a big deal, you know?
The inverted pyramid is black, and that's the board of directors. The normal pyramid is white, and that represents surgeons. So okay. The exact opposite of a surgeon is the board of directors.
Board
of
surgeons.
Hippocratic oath. You kill one guy, but then stop doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
Northmoor was, however, given a suite of powers by the board of directors, described as thermal, so he could, I guess, freeze or ignite things.
Okay.
And he became obsessed with finding and researching more events and items, tasking Ted Ash Jr. with establishing a permanent research base within the oldest house. And, like, as it happens, you can say, like, safely, and that's in huge quotation marks, because...
Find more of these objects that if someone touches them, they die right away. Yeah. But do it safely.
As it happens, altered items and oops can be stored within a place of power. So the oldest house was like the way to do it. Okay. This is also when people started calling the building the oldest house. Northmoor, when he got back from his meeting with the board, insisted that that's what they call it. What they were calling it before that is unknown. They probably had like an AWE dash for the strange occurrence in the subway.
Yep. Northmoor just bought a house himself, and everyone's making fun of him because it's an old house.
Yeah, yeah. So This is the oldest house. Okay. I'm director now. Do you see the pyramid hat? Okay, I'm the director now.
Waving the service weapon around like a madman, just like, it's me. I'm in charge.
I could shoot you. Or I could just make you touch it, okay? So watch yourself.
Otherwise, it would just be like, yeah, the objects of power can be safely contained within the cheap fixer-upper, and I just, that doesn't, it's not as fun say, right?
I'm storing my object of power in my new high-rise condo overlooking the bay.
Yeah.
Very utilitarian. Brutalist. That's the one, yeah.
The country's called Paraguay, Jamie. Jesus Christ.
I stole a joke from I think it's an old TikTok or an old Vine or whatever. Someone's like, tells their little brother, I'm a lesbian. And the brother's like, I thought you were American.
Very good.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. He was just, he really meant it. Yeah.
Several more AWEs occurred in the 70s. Two in Bright Falls, Washington State. The first being at Cauldron Lake, which is called a caldera lake, which just means it's a volcano crater filled with water.
Okay.
A writer named Thomas Zane lived out on an island in the lake in a cabin with his girlfriend Barbara Jagger and their assistant Emil Hartman. This island was called Diver's Isle due to Zane's love of diving in the lake. He has like one of those big old-timey diver suits with the little pincers on it and the big dome helmet with all the portholes and shit. So he was a poet and a diver.
Okay.
Can you imagine? I mean, he's got a girlfriend now, but can you imagine that kind of resume when you're like hitting on a girl? It's like, oh, I'm a poet and a diver. There's two things I love in the world is the beauty of words and the beauty of fish. And then it's just like swoon, especially in the 70s.
Yeah. Hey, baby, I love using my words and I love going down and getting wet, if you know what I mean.
You know what I mean?
Any scuba divers out there? You're free to use that one.
Oh, finally. Like one scuba guy listening right now, just like waiting for the right words to say to the girl he's in love with. Thank you, Ethan.
Sitting in his wetsuit at the bar. Like, he's got his tank on. His goggles, on. Goggles and his flippers walking across the bar. Like,
reciting Flanders Fields or something like that.
spills his drink on himself. Like, oh, no, don't worry. It's a wetsuit.
Like he keeps trying that move, keeps dumping one on himself,
sloshing around, full of mixed drinks.
It's an incredibly stupid image.
Yeah. Hair would get so blonde just being bathed in booze all the time, totally burnt.
I would love a nervous scuba guy at a bar. For the art for this episode, doesn't have to be Peter. It's always your choice, but
I'm gonna do it. At some point before 1970, Zane and Hartman discovered the supernatural powers of the lake. Though the lake's properties had been known for probably thousands of years at this point, because even the Native Americans told early colonists that the lake was a portal to the underworld. So, like, as soon as people started showing up in the Pacific Northwest, like 10, 15,000 years ago, this knowledge that there was something wrong with Cauldron Lake was just, like, passed down through generation after generation after generation after generation. It's always been known. After Barbara drowned under mysterious circumstances, Hartman suggested that Zane use the lake's powers to write a story in which Barbara comes back to life. This actually worked. Sort of.
He's like dipping like a paintbrush into the water and trying to write a poem with it? Or like, how do you write a story with a lake?
I love
it. Cauldron Lake just allows what you write on it, like while within the confines of the lake, to come true. So Zane uses a typewriter.
Oh.
His presence on Diver's Isle in the middle of Cauldron Lake, I guess, is what gives it this power.
He originally tried a PC, but like the extension cord kept getting wet and short-circuiting it, so.
Yeah, especially one of those 1970s computers he had. It's like, I was bigger than the house. It was outside. It kept getting wet.
Yeah. Just toes like a steam freighter up into the middle of this volcanic crater lake.
Yeah, man, I'm writing a story. It's contained on this barge that I needed to drag out. It cost me all my money. I am completely, I'm flat fucking broke. God, I hope this works.
8 megs of RAM, though. Pretty sick.
Oh, Christ, that's way too much for the 70s. Are you kidding?
I have no idea.
So Barbara did come back after drowning in the lake. However, she returned possessed by something that would just become known as the Dark Presence, which is some sort of extra-dimensional entity. So it's another paranormal entity that has come out of not necessarily the astral plane, but one of many possible realities. Zane was like, fuck, and killed her again by cutting out her heart this time. But like a classic ex-wife, he found only like an all-consuming darkness within her body. So she was just kind of like a shell. He then used the power of the lake to write her and him out of existence and put on his deep sea diving suit, grabbed Barbara and threw both of them into Cauldron Lake to get them both kind of trapped in a little micro universe somewhere within the Dark Presence.
Damn.
In the alternate dimension at the bottom of the lake.
Sounds cramped.
Yeah. I mean, they're not sharing the suit to my knowledge. Thankfully. Just like, one bikini wrapped around the both of them.
All right, you get one cup, I'll get the other.
I was really thinking of putting it on her and then tying it behind him as if they were big spoon, little spoon, not standing next to each other to put on a bikini. This seems to have caused an AWE. It seems to have manifested itself as what is now called AWE 35. It's the first Bright Falls AWE, a volcanic earthquake in the volcano underneath Cauldron Lake started to erupt, and it actually sank Zane's island and cabin into the ocean, trapping Barbara and him inside. It also, in a related, what is just a regular oopsie and not an actual oops, the earthquake also flooded the local Bright Falls silver mine and killed 32 miners. And also the entire silver mining trade in this area.
Think of the canaries.
can't go back in the cake.
So, yeah, when it like turned just, around, the cage is underwater. It was like something seems awry.
Yeah, that's it. Just like instead of do you hear that? Wait, I don't hear the canary. No, wait, there it is. we're good. Keep going.
You mind if you're silver boys? The Dark Presence seems to be able to reach out every once in a while, so writing himself and Barbara out of existence and then trapping them both within the alternate dimension didn't seem to have worked entirely. In 1976, the Presence kind of got out somehow and attacked the rock band called the Old Gods of Asgard.
All right.
Yeah. Tor and Odin Anderson admitted to police that they had spent days actual days getting fucking blasted off their homemade moonshine,
hell yeah,
which, like all healthy diets, contained unfiltered lake water.
Okay. Not good.
From Cauldron Lake.
If it's like 90% alcohol, I feel like it's not that big a deal if the water's a little dirty, right?
Okay, so Jamie's that's going to be a no on the human meat order, but a yes on the lake water moonshine order, I guess, is the impression I'm getting from you.
It would ruin your mash. Like, I don't know if you'd be able to, like, you might not be able to distill it with lake water because it might ruin it, or it would just, like Jamie says, it should just come out as alcohol. It would be flavored, it would be flavored like dirty lake water, but it should just come out like alcohol.
Yeah. Ethan's been distilling his own liquor, so he can try it for us.
For legal reasons, no, I have not. That's a joke.
Tor and Odin Anderson admitted again that they were drunk. So after Tor was struck by lightning and something made Odin cut out his own right eye, they reported to police that they had defeated the scratching hag that had arisen from the lake.
I just love the idea of these two really drunk guys, like down by the fucking lake, fall into it, and like, I don't know, a catfish like grabs one of their back or something, or just like a bunch of leeches. And it's like, oh, I had to save my brother from the scratching hag.
So since getting lake parasites on your own property isn't illegal, they were left alone after being treated for their missing eye and lightning burns. They were just left alone.
Good.
The Andersons seem, however, to be peri-utilitarians in some capacity. Their moonshine has the power to restore memories, as it is made from the magic water of Cauldron Lake.
That's the opposite of moonshine.
Yeah, it is. There's a joke about that in the game Alan Wake, because you get wasted off moonshine, and then they actually recognize the fact it's like so strange that I actually remember more now after drinking psychic water.
Wow,
psychic hooch.
They also wrote a song called "Take Control." Which will end up being very important to the director of the FBC within the Oldest House.
Country roads, take control of this moonshine. And my soul.
And my soul.
Shambling
back
hags.
Back to New York. Scratching hags. So we're going back to New York. Now that we've had a little vacation on the West Coast, we're going back to the Best Coast. Within the Oldest House, Deputy Director Zachariah Trench became
another great name.
There's a lot of good names.
Yeah.
So the guys who wrote Max Payne also did this, so all the names are pretty good.
Yeah, something about like a long first name and then a one syllable last name just rings so
satisfying,
so good.
Right?
Yeah.
What about
Theodore Ash, Zachariah Trench?
Yeah, Zachariah Trench. Northmore, though, is, I mean, that's just kind of like a cool name.
Tromboni Clam, the great detective.
Tromboni Clam.
I'm Tromboni Clam, world class dick.
Meh.
Vote. Go to patreon.com to vote on whether or not you want me to do Tromboni Clam lore for next week's episode.
Yeah, man.
Or, I don't know, StarCraft, some shit.
Yeah, you fucking decide.
Tromboni Clam.
Tromboni Clam, world's greatest detective, or fucking StarCraft or some shit.
Deputy Director Trench, now he is not appointed by the board. He was appointed in regular corporate ways. He became completely dedicated to his work after some kind of supernatural or paranatural pathogen got tracked home with him. He didn't wipe his shoes on the way out or whatever when he was leaving the Oldest House to go back to his newer house.
He put some of the honey from that were in the cabinets into his tea probably while he was there.
And didn't rinse out his cup properly before bringing it home.
Yeah.
Yeah. This got tracked home and it infected his daughter. His wife quite reasonably didn't want Trench to take their daughter back to the Oldest House because the nature of the work scared her. Like, how would you even explain that to your wife if you're like, oh yeah, I go on expeditions into other dimensions. And my boss is just the mouthpiece from what he describes as an infinite inverted pyramid in a giant blank space. She's like, okay, honey, that's nice. Yeah. I mean, I have enough trouble sometimes explaining like what a podcast is to people. Like, yeah, yeah. Can you imagine? What's your podcast about? I take orders from an inverted black pyramid. Fuck.
Yeah.
Fuck.
If they're past a certain age, I just call it a radio show.
Oh,
I do a radio show online, and then they understand.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty good. So anyway, Trench's daughter died.
Oof.
Yeah, because she had a paranatural infection from an extra-dimensional pathogen, and they didn't want to get her treated within the oldest house, so there was literally nothing that this dimension's medicine could do. This predictably
our antibiotics just aren't effective against extra-dimensional bacteria.
This led to the family getting divorced. It was their only child. It's not like they had like another kid to just like shower love on or whatever.
Keep it together for.
Yeah, exactly. They had no reason now, so they got divorced. She took half of everything, you know, the altered wedding china that was all haunted, all that shit.
Can't touch them. Can't touch them because they'll kill her, but took half of everything.
You can touch an altered item. They're not objects of power. Right. So she would be fine. It's just like all the food you put on this altered china would be transformed in some hilarious way, presumably.
Everything turns into gravy, which I'm not complaining about, you know?
But your utensils do as well. So you like try and scoop out some of the gravy and then that dissolves.
Turns to gravy, yeah, yeah.
And then you just like staring at a pile of gravy.
You put your lips against the bowl, your lips turn to gravy. It's just it's a slippery slope.
Gravy face.
Gravy
face.
It's like
face. Might have thought about that.
Gravy, you know, I would be so surprised if Gravy Face wasn't the name of like some C-list horror movie villain that like was launched specifically for TV during Thanksgiving.
Please pull up that clip. I was more thinking of like the tale of King Midas where, you know, everything he touches turns to gravy and then he touches his daughter and she dissolves into gravy and it's a lesson about greed.
Oh no. So would you eat human flesh or daughter gravy first?
Given the nature of altered items.
Yeah.
Cause it's like probably it's totally gravy, normal right? gravy.
Yeah. It's just gravy.
The cost was the same. It was a human life.
Yeah, I mean, true.
Yeah.
Wouldn't give me the shakes, though, maybe. Or maybe it would, because it's haunted gravy. I don't know.
Paranatural gravy. It seems a little bit more dangerous. So he had nothing left but his job. So his dedication to the FBC would actually pay off. The current director, Northmore's lust for power, resulted him starting to kind of lose control of the abilities he already had. And he was eventually convinced, by which I mean he had no other choice, to keep the lights on is the term that the board or that the FBC uses. He is actually currently still alive when the game takes place in 2019, locked within a gigantic sarcophagus in the center of the maintenance sector of the oldest house. His thermal abilities apparently provide power to the building.
He's in a giant sarcophagus. There must be things of honey in there.
Yeah, right? Ancient honey.
Trench didn't really want to be director, and apparently he picked up the service weapon basically on a dare because he was so unhappy. It's like, I'm either going to dedicate my life to the FBC or I'll drop fucking dead.
Either or.
The board was okay with it, though, because he, too, is a power utilitarian.
Nice.
He's got that dual citizenship, baby. he started to implement some changes within the house. He ordered the construction of what is called the Panopticon, which is a prison or like a containment facility for oops and altered items. The Panopticon is a real philosophical concept that is physically impossible to build in real life. The concept of a panopticon is an institutional building where one guard could observe every prisoner without being seen. It was put forward by Jeremy Bentham in the 18th century.
He owned a prison and was cheap as fuck.
I mean, pretty much. It's just like one watchtower in like a coliseum of like jail cells along the edge, which is like, yeah, you could put one guard in there, but he can't look at fucking 460 prisoners all at the same time. Like,
exactly. That's why it's always been more of a philosophical concept. Some socialist philosophers have used like the surveillance of workers as an example of the panopticon concept, and critics of CCTV and other forms of mass surveillance have also like referred to Bantham's panopticon like in their writings. And this is real history. Like, actual people have done writings about this. So, like, the Chinese government right now can be seen as kind of a panopticon with their weird, like, facial recognition and, like, constant surveillance, as well as the facial recognition and the CCTV that they use in the UK. Like, in socioeconomic philosophy, it doesn't need to be a real physical prison, but, like, constant surveillance is really the key. Yeah, it's to alter people's behavior, because the idea of the panopticon is if the prisoners think they could possibly be being watched at all times, they will always act as though they are being watched. Which is why it plays into like socialist theory and stuff like that. Like anything where anybody who cares about the rights of the person that they're writing about would see surveillance as a form of panopticon, basically.
Neat.
In the oldest house, however, obviously because of the infinite space and supernatural nature of everything in there, the panopticon is real. It is a storage facility for objects of power, people that may be touched by objects of power, or even, and then just altered items themselves. It's just a form of containment, because given Northmore's kind of going off the rails and losing control of his powers, when Trench took over, he was like, look, we really can't have this we cannot have this happen again. So we're going to, that plastic pink flamingo is going to jail, and we're going to keep an eye on it, basically.
Yeah. We're going to have one guy keep an eye on it, and the 460 other plastic flamingo-like objects.
There is a optional side quest in Control where there is a guy whose replacement did not show up, and his job is to stare at an old fridge, because if anybody takes their eyes off the fridge, it will kill them. And
oh, it's like the cement monster from SCP.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Instead of snapping your neck, what does it do?
It teleports you to like a rejected part of the astral plane where you fight a gigantic monster called the Former, which seems to be some sort of like rejected being that may have worked for the board of directors at some point. Like a former board member. It's like this giant...
The reformer board member?
Shadow Mantis, basically.
Wow. You said teleport you to another rejected area of the Astral Sea or whatever, and I thought you were going to end there, and I was just picturing like, oh, it just teleports you inside of like a 1950s refrigerator that doesn't open from the inside. So you just suffocate.
What were you going to say, Jamie?
I forget. I got a lot.
He was going to ask if you fight it.
Yeah, you do. You do. It's an optional boss. It's called the Former. You can fight it multiple times. And it can play a larger place in the story.
Would you rather have to fight a big old mantis or be turned to gravy?
The mantis fight's not really that hard, so I'll take that one.
Yeah, I mean, okay. The mantis fight, you have a shot. You can't defend against being turned to gravy.
But no. It sounds kind of delightful, doesn't it?
It's the Betty Crocker touch instead of the Midas touch, right?
Yeah.
So along with the panopticon, Trench implemented a lockdown protocol, which works kind of like bulkheads on a ship, which I think is the term for the things that keep it from sinking. It's like the sectioned off parts where you can like shut a door to prevent the entire place from filling up.
Oh yeah. Like in Titanic, when they start closing those on and people are still on the wrong side of them.
Yeah. Well, in the Titanic, it was specifically to make sure the Irish can't get out. Exactly. Because
a bulkhead, the ship upright. A bulkhead is an upright wall within the hull of a ship or within the fuselage of an aeroplane.
Huh.
Oh. There's no water in the sky, though.
I mean,
except
clouds.
For clouds, yeah.
There are. There's more planes in the sea than there are submarines in the sky, right?
Yeah, that's the old saying.
That's a good one.
So these bulkheads are just kind of to seal off different departments from each other. If there's ever like paranatural leaks in the panopticon, they can seal it off, and then like maintenance doesn't get flooded with. Well, I mean, there is one thing. There is an anchor that just shoots clocks at you, and that thing's contained and totally sealed off.
I think I watched you play that part.
You did watch me fight the yeah. anchor. So yeah. they have sealed off a bulkhead that leads to the containment sector that has the anchor in it because it just keeps producing clocks, and they have no idea what to fucking do with them. It's just
there's not enough flea markets in the world. Damn it.
Yeah, with our older generations, like, we keep running out of old people faster than we can breed new young people, so there is literally no one to buy $2 clocks.
The Felix running. The cat ones, the with the eyes that move with the ticker.
Only. He also put together a management team now to ensure that the oldest house remains contained and safe. And the classification system they use is quite literally just inspired by the SCP Foundation wiki. Like, there instead of Keter class for, like, the difficult to contain shit, in Control it's just KE. So they were just like, well, we don't need that much of a word. Just cut it down.
Keter is actually a doctor in, he's like one of the researchers in SCP. And I didn't fully research him, but he has a story, probably with a very dangerous SCP, probably, to get
well,
that.
Well, goddammit, since this is the last episode of Lore Boys ever, I guess we'll never know. Two SCP episodes, that's all you're getting.
Yeah.
His management team was consisted of Lynn Salvador, Alberto Tomasi, Helen Marshall, and most importantly of all, Casper Darling. He's the head of research now. Darling is easily one of my favorite video game characters fucking ever.
He's a great name.
Phenomenal. All his parts in game are like short little live action educational videos about, like, oops, the astral plane and many of the discoveries within the oldest house. Like, he's basically a collectible. And the actor won a BAFTA for his performance in Control because he just fucking slays it. He's having so much fun.
He had to take a bath because he stunk, or he was
dirty? Take a BAFTA. BAFTA, clean yourself up, you mook.
What's a BAFTA? Is that like the North American Free Trade Agreement or something?
Yeah. Yes.
It is. So Trump had a problem with NAFTA, which is later on in the alphabet.
Yeah.
The BAFTA was the second agreement that we attempted to make.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Exactly.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
There was the AFTA first, then there was the BAFTA.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. What's that actually for? That's like video game acting?
The BAFTA is like the British
Academy of Film and Television yeah. Arts.
Oh.
There you go. British actors, film, television actors.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. It's the North American Free Trade Agreement, obviously.
Yeah. It's like as good as the Oscars if they took out, you know, 99% of the world population.
Yeah.
And said it's just for these one type of people.
Okay, cool.
And video games now. But he got an award for his performance. I highly recommend looking up the Casper Darling clips if you don't plan on playing Control, because he is fan-fucking-tastic.
Cool.
Thankfully, maintenance seems to have taken care of itself. A paranatural entity named A-001 appeared without explanation and takes the form of a surly old Finnish janitor named Ati. He roams the oldest house, keeping things in order. The Bureau is not overly concerned with him and cannot contain him, but he's seemingly harmless and just does regular janitor shit for some reason.
Can't complain.
But yeah, exactly.
He's not turning anyone to gravy, so that's gravy. You know?
That's pretty good. Not like that other janitor. Jesus.
Yeah. Janitor gravy face.
He carries an old cassette player, which also appears to be an oops. And while playing, a cassette containing the song of the old gods of Asgard, Take Control, it actually protects the listener within the shifting walls of the ashtray maze.
Oh my god.
Yeah, so the song that those two old drunks wrote on a cassette in Ati's cassette player actually protects you from a separate OOP. Oh. In the meantime.
I feel like the music would be so bad. It'd be like 12-minute rock ballads based on like epic fantasy or something. And the warrior took the flute.
So Take Control, the lyrics of Take Control are actually pretty funny because it's written and performed by a band called Poets of the Fall, who I think are definitely friends with Remedy because they're in Alan Wake. They do a lot of the music. So they're like, it's a real band performing as a fake band. The song Take Control is entirely just about the plot of the game Control. It's completely, it's totally meta.
I mean, it's right. It is a they are a Finnish rock band, so
Poets of the Fall is right.
Yeah,
are
yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. So the Moonshiners wrote a song that, when played by Ahti in his cassette deck, will protect the wearer from the Ashtray Maze, which is it looks very Twin Peaksy. It's got like the zigzag pattern that you can see in the red room in that show, if you've ever seen clips or whatever.
No,
it
just
it shifts around constantly.
Yeah, it's a common thing in SCP too. Like, there's certain SCPs that their whole function is to contain another SCP. Like,
yeah, so it's very much that. It's like these oops protect you from the Ashtray Maze. Well, because you can go into the Ashtray Maze without the cassette and without Take Control, but you can't. It just you'll just get completely lost. The walls shift constantly, and you can never actually get through it.
It's like trying to go through the dark cave before you got Flash. Don't do it, you dingus.
Yeah. You can totally do that if you memorize it.
Yeah, though. Unless you're a speedrunner.
I used to.
Well.
And then the final thing that he implemented here, to ensure that there wasn't another Northmoor, Trench implemented the Prime Candidate Program. And he wanted to find para-utilitarians before they got their hands on the service weapon to ensure that they were, like, sane enough to wield it and lead the FBC. Like, he knew the rules of the service weapon, that the board was going to choose this person no matter what. But if you could limit the candidate pool to reliable people, then it would be less dangerous for this dimension if you could, like, okay, yeah, like, you've earned your gold star. Here's your transforming gun. I can die now, sort of thing.
When do we get our freaking guns?
I'm sick of all your stinking rules.
Hey, I told you, you don't get a gun till you tell me your name. Pat it up to here with your rules.
Rules. What are you guys talking about?
The Simpsons.
So Marge becomes a cop for like one guy in the candidate pool. That's insane.
Clearly unhinged. He's asking for a gun. Chief Wiggum's just like, only when you tell me your name.
Candidates 1 to 5were all described as, quote, false leads, dead ends, and disappointments.
Ouch.
Yeah. That's me. I'm all those things, Trench. Let me try again.
Yeah,
I need a fourth title.
That's the name of my autobiography.
False lead, dead end, and disappointment. In the distant future of 2002, the FBC got a report of a major AWE in the town of Ordinary, Maine, which is very ironic because this is quite out of the main, if you ask me.
Some would say a para-ordinary experience.
Did it happen in Dairy, Maine? Like Stephen King things?
It's Ordinary, Maine.
Ordinary.
I wonder if that's...
Dairy is ordinary and in Ordinary, Maine.
Yeah, I wonder if that's like a nod at Stephen King.
It definitely is. So in Alan Wake, there's like an ornery FBI guy who's like following you around. And to like... talk shit, because Alan Wake is also an author, to talk shit to Alan, he calls you the names of other authors for some reason.
Okay.
He's like, listen, he calls you, at least as far as I got in my replay of the game before recording this, he's like, he calls you H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, and James Joyce, as though those are insults. He's like, listen to me, James Joyce, I don't give a shit what you think is going on and your wife's been kidnapped. It's like, what the fuck? What are you doing?
okay, easy there, Stephanie Meyer. Huh? I don't care if your boyfriend is a 1,000-year-old vampire whose sun glints in the sunlight, or skin glints in the sunlight.
Did she hear Twilight?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that's her name. I might have got that wrong.
Jamie, pull up the clip.
Sounds right to me.
Yeah. Stephanie Meyer, protagonist of Alan Wake, for some reason. So in Ordinary, Maine, there's two kids, Jesse and Dylan Faden, 11 and 10 at the time, respectively. They were playing in the scrapyard that most well-adjusted children like to play in. Obviously, we've all played in the scrapyards, boys, right?
If there was a scrapyard near me when I was growing up, I definitely would have played in it.
I would have so many rusty cuts, 100%.
We definitely went to the quarry and like would mess around there, but I don't know about a scrapyard.
It's like regular like small town shit, basically.
Yeah.
2002 seems late to me for someone to do this, but I don't know. So Jesse Faden is our age. She was born in 1991.
Okay.
At some point, they had a regular day playing in the scrapyard. One day they went back in 2002, and they realized that the entire scrapyard had kind of shifted in a way that allowed them to explore more deeply. And then within the dump, they found the slide projector. Projector, excuse me. Unknown to them, this was an object of power. Just an old slide projector. The total amount of slides that was with it, or that were with it, is unconfirmed. However, it's 7, 8, or 9 total slides. And the photos on the slides just acted as gateways to other planes of reality that would be called slidescapes. So every slide was a door somewhere else.
Okay.
Like we talked about Iris Thompson, the girl who appears in photographs that are taken with a camera type thing. It's like,
yeah,
the photos.
You can make yourself appear in that one, right?
Yeah.
It's like you can enter Super Mario 64. But it's like a portable painting machine.
Yeah,
it's exactly that. Yeah, I mean, you could call a slide projector overall a portable painting machine, kind of in general.
But one that you could enter, like in Super Mario 64, is what I was saying.
Super Mario's fiction, but yes.
Woohoo!
People used to like gather around and show their vacation photos on those things. All right, everybody, get on the Chesterfield. We're going to look at our vacation from last year.
Yeah. Don't take the plastic off. Just get comfortable.
Yeah.
So
house isn't that old, damn it.
We're not going to cover all of the slidescapes, but Jesse and Dylan did manage to like kind of crouch down and jam themselves between a staircase and a wall and then rocket off through the slidescape portals.
Hell yeah.
Speed run the slidescapes, obviously.
Obviously.
You got to do it.
Yeah. The most important slidescape is slidescape 36, since on the actual slide, little plastic frame, if some of our audience is too young to know what a slide projector slide looks like, it's like a little plastic frame with a transparent, tiny version of a picture in it.
And then when you shine a light from behind it and you put a wall far away, it makes a big picture.
It makes a painting on the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's how you take your paintings with you.
It's like when you put a flashlight on the bottom of your fleshlight and point it at a wall, right?
Yeah.
You can see the fish swimming.
You get that big almond
ball. Wait a minute, those aren't fish swimming.
Oh no, they're dead. I'm sorry.
Oh
my! It's just on the frame of the slide. It was written color slide film this side towards screen 36. That's it. So they called it slidescape 36. The children called this place Hand. Since within the slidescape was kind of a vast, seemingly infinite desert with these huge black pillars poking out of the sand. And there was 5 of them that just looked like the fingers of a hand.
Cool.
Yeah. Very Malazan. I mean, there's a couple of things in this story so far that are pretty Malazan, but which is a fantasy book series that Jamie and I have both read.
Okay. Yeah.
There's the Houses of the Azath, which is the oldest house that can like change and like seems to have a mind of its own. And then there's these like statues of jade in Malazan, which are like sticking out of a specific desert.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if it was inspired by that, if that's what I found out. Because Sam Lake, who is the creative director at Remedy, loves other people's work and like works it into the Remedy games all the time. Like obviously with this SVP game.
Right. What a simp, loves other people's work. You should just do your own thing, man.
Yeah, only and exclusively like us, only talking about our own work that we've created, right?
Exactly. Simp.
So, a trio of Sam Lakes over here. within Hand, Jesse and Dylan and their friend Neil, who had asthma and would get nosebleeds, so he was the resident looper at the school, encountered some kind of paranormal intelligence. It told the kids that it would make them special and then began to live inside their heads. This is unclear because you don't really find out too much about Dylan. Jesse recognized the being as female and named her Polaris because she had just learned about the star in school and again was 11. I don't know whether this entity just takes the sex of the body it's living in. So Jesse's is her, but she refers to it as she throughout the game. And then Dylan talks about the entity within his head, but doesn't refer to it as her or as Polaris. So they're separate or they're interpreted differently within these people. But the Polaris now lives within the heads of Dylan and Jesse.
Cool.
Rent free, baby.
What was that?
Rent free.
Yeah. Mostly getting into fights about Polaris on Twitter. God damn it. Never stop thinking about it. Ati, the janitor, can hear and respond directly to Jesse's internal monologues with her roommate, though.
Oh, okay. Good.
So there are these weird internal asides. Polaris kind of takes the place of the player. So whenever Jesse has a thought when you're playing the game, it's kind of in canon. She's talking to Polaris, but she says like you or whatever. So it does sometimes sound like she's like sarcastically breaking the fourth wall. Mm-hmm. Polaris is just like the in canon fourth wall, pretty much.
Okay. A fifth wall that's located behind the fourth wall, like some sort of bulkhead, right?
Yes. And Ati can interact with this thing as well. So when she internal monologues, like, wow, this janitor sure is a weird guy, he responds to that thought, not what she said.
Okay.
The first person she meets in the oldest house and interacts with for any period of time is Ati. And then, yeah, that's their weird kind of back and forth.
Very cool.
Local bullies. This is a very Stephen King moment in this during this AWE. Local bullies stole the slide projector from these fucking the scrapyard nerds, and began interacting with another entity called the Not Mother. She gave them milk that turned them into actual monsters, and that actually led to the murder of one of their school teachers.
The fact that they could have stolen the slide projector at all meant that they were even para-utilitarians then, right?
I don't know.
Unless they just so happened to be wearing very cool, like, gloves when they did the theft.
Yeah,
they've got the fingerless gloves because they're bullies.
Fingerless wouldn't have worked, though. They would have had to have fingers. Because I was originally going to say fingerless, and I was like, no, that wouldn't work, because then your fingers would touch it.
Contact with you. Oops, eh?
Yeah. Or they're wearing fingerless gloves, and they happen to be para-utilitarians, which would make sense why this night mother, or whatever you call her, would take an interest in and turn them into monsters, right?
Yeah, or the gateways. Because to be a para-utilitarian, you would have to be able to absorb the power from the slide projector and create doorways of your own. Whereas going through the gateways, I don't believe you need to be para-utilitarian. Because we will get into it later on. The board does get this thing and lead expeditions into the slidescapes. And not everyone who works for the FBC is para-utilitarian.
Yeah, but the kids got the slideshow back, right? Like in true Stephen King fashion, they all had to have sex with each other or something to
get it back. Yeah.
Yeah.
The true slide projector was inside you all along.
Thankfully, no. Unlike Castlevania Season 3, there's no weird incest three-way in the Control lore. Over the next couple of days, the ordinary AWE, which is officially now known as AWE 24, continued. Every adult in the town disappeared. And the bullies transformed into like twisted ape men that were led into town by the Not Mother. So she actually left her slidescape and came into our realm to attack the children in Ordinary.
Oh, no.
Jesse and Dylan did manage to get the slide projector, thankfully not by having sex with each other or with Neil, and they managed to escape. Neil, however, like disappeared for a period of time and then returned as some kind of other benevolent monster that Jesse describes as looking like a melted dog.
Yikes. Ew.
Yeah, and he helped kind of get rid of, helped thwart the Not Mother and the bullies. Jesse ended up burning all of the slides, except number 36, which caused the Not Mother, the bullies, and Neil to all vanish. So as soon as their gateways could no longer be opened, destroyed with regular Our Dimension fire, they just vanished. So damn. They did not kill the Not Mother, or the bully ape men, or melted dog Neil. They just vanished and returned to their respective slidescapes, presumably never being able to get out ever again.
Poor Neil.
Yeah, he turned into that thing. I mean, who knew that was the cure for asthma? His puffer turned him into a melted dog, whatever that is.
I guess really poor all those kids, even the bullies. Like, bullying sucks, but like maybe that's not a fit punishment, right?
No, I mean, they're probably getting shit at home from, like, their alcoholic dad or whatever that makes them lash out at school, and then they turn into a monkey man and get cast into a slide projector screen.
Yeah, forever.
Yeah. Try and explain that to your therapist.
with your between your melted woofs.
Yeah. You think fucking you got problems?
Just had asthma. What did he do wrong? The FBC arrived to get the projector, Slidescape 36, and then they also kidnapped Dylan for the prime candidate program. At the time, they did not take Jesse, so she was kind of left to drift through life telling people what had happened to her, but no one believed her, obviously. Trench also managed to salvage one of the slides that was not entirely burnt, but this was a cheeky under-the-table move that was not officially recorded by the FBC.
Okay.
So this director, who's very afraid of paranormal entities, has a couple of secrets of his own, apparently. Not beyond corruption, right? we're all human.
Yeah.
Back at the oldest house, Trench and Darling started to lead expeditions. I can't say that. Expeditions.
Mm-hmm.
Into Slidescape 36 until the discovery of what is called Hedron. It's like a gigantic D20 shaped organism that has some sort of mysterious power of resonance. I've always said Hedron, but in game they pronounce it Hedron.
Huh. Hedron, I'll take you on. Hedron, I'll take on anyone.
That band, like, lately has been kind of fucked up people, though, so I feel like I should
stop. What band is that?
I think it's Trapped.
I've never even heard of them. Yeah. I just know that song.
Yeah.
Yeah. The FBC moved Hedron to the oldest house, so out of the Slidescape they took it, and they contained it just to study it and kind of hang out with it, I guess. While the Bureau tried to train Dylan Faden to get him ready to be the next director, because they realized that his contact with Polaris had made him a really good candidate, pretty much the only good candidate that they'd known so far. He's prime candidate 6. This wasn't going well. Dylan was violent and couldn't really control his powers. He killed agents by accident, and then sometimes would just lash out and destroy things or kill people anyway. And this definitely didn't have anything to do with the fucked up educational videos that the FBC had made for him. There is a series of video recorded puppet shows that you can watch in game called the Threshold Kids.
Okay.
Videos star 3 creepy puppets, Topher, Meg, and Uncle Mr. Bones. a little boy, a little girl, and an adult human skeleton wearing the face of a human woman, respectively.
Good.
What the?
Yeah. And basically, Uncle Mr. Bones is there to teach Topher and Meg, like, whatever you see inside the oldest house, like the difference between like a secret and like a not secret, like a rainbow, not secret, the true nature of rainbows. And it is just like a skeleton puppet doll that talks. Its mouth just goes up and down on like a stick. It doesn't like flap open. It shifts up and down, and it has like a Barbie doll face just kind of hanging off the side of its head, as though it's like thinly disguised as a human, but it's still very clearly like a hissing skeleton. His name is Uncle Mr. Bones. These were intended apparently to teach Dylan about the Bureau and prepare him to be director. They probably just fucked him up. If you're not going to play the game, watch the Threshold Kids clips on YouTube. They're hilariously weird. And now I'm going to briefly cover one last AWE, which is AWE 35, just to wrap this up. It took place in 2010, again in September, in the city, once again, of Bright Falls, Washington. This AWE is the game Alan Wake. So they kind of retroactively made Alan Wake canon in Control by stating that all the events of that game involving the Dark Presence are a third AWE from Cauldron Lake, and this is AWE 35. Overall, this game's super fucking old now. This is the story of how Alan becomes trapped in Thomas Zane's cabin at the bottom of Cauldron Lake because the entire house was transported to the dark dimension, basically.
Okay.
And Alan is also an author. He's a very Stephen King like guy. He's very James Joyce. He's very H.P. Lovecraft. Yeah, yeah. If the FBI guy razzing his balls is to be believed. it's like I know authors too. You got to read to get into the FBI. Believe me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, okay. Listen up, Dr. Seuss. Okay, I don't need your green eggs and ham right now.
Listen, I got through FBA, B, C, D, all the way to I, and here I is. Alan, again, like I said, is an author, and he is using his own typewriter within Thomas Zane's cabin at the bottom of Cauldron Lake to write a story in which he manages to get out and save his wife. So the Alan Wake you're playing in Alan Wake is the manifested character within Alan's story about himself defeating the darkness.
Okay.
Okay.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's great. I really recommend it. It's probably cheap as shit. And again, it came out a long time ago, so it'll run on anything.
It is. Right now, because time of recording, so not for maybe not for our listeners, it is the autumn sale on Steam, and it is $4.49 USD.
Absolutely worth it.
Wow.
Absolutely worth it. It's not very long. Before reinstalling it, I'd only beaten it once. It took me 9 hours. Absolutely worth it. It's a lot of fun. Very strange. Very wonky and zany, like a lot of Remedy stuff is. And a good lead into Control, which I absolutely recommend.
Cool.
Right, so that's the plot of that game, and that's AWE35. Alan remains trapped within the lake, even though he does save his wife. And there's a collectible within Control, or in the Control DLC AWE, where it's like a semi-redacted interview with Alice Wake about why she won't speak to her husband anymore. She states that, like, while whatever I spoke to looked like my husband, that thing was not my fucking husband. So some sort of dark presence corrupted version of Alan, I guess, went to try and meet Alice at some point. And if you remember earlier, Thomas Zane's assistant, Emil Hartman, in Bright Falls in 2010, he's like an older guy now who has one of those like stupid fucking crystal healing therapy lodges for celebrities.
Sure.
He seems to have been interested in unleashing the darkness. However, he gets corrupted by the darkness at some point, and then he actually gets apprehended and contained within a little model version of Bright Falls inside the oldest house.
Very cute.
Yeah. And then he ends up getting further corrupted by another extra dimensional force that we'll talk about in a second here, turning him into like a 15-foot tall distended backwards horror monster, basically, because you can only get so much haunted crap into one person before they turn into a monster, apparently.
Okay, sure.
But in the AWE DLC, the entire DLC is about like hunting down and defeating the corrupted Hartman. So that's where he ends up after just kind of vanishing from the game.
Tiny town.
Interaction with that with Hedron gave Darling information about a malicious entity that was trying to get into the oldest house through the remaining slide. Darling had things called HRAs created to project the employees of the bureau. HRA means Hedron Resonance Amplifier. It's like this little black disc that sits in a case on your chest that straps into you, and it uses the Hedron Resonance to counteract the evil resonance to protect the wearer from being possessed by the corrupting influence of the astral plane or wherever the fuck this other thing comes from.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. It's their spooky spaceship, a space suit rather.
not even, it's just a little, it looks like a hot plate strapped to your chest.
Okay. That's all.
You can wear regular civilian clothing and you just like strap it on. It's got like two belts. That's it. It's nice. It's like the size of a jewel case CD. Basically.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Anyway, he had those created to protect everybody. During one of the expeditions into Slidescape 36, Trench was corrupted by the malicious resonance, referred to in-game as the Hiss, due to the sound it makes. So Hartman is now dual corrupted by the Dark Presence and the Hiss. The Hiss seems to be much more brutal than the Dark Presence, because the enemies in Alan Wake are just corrupted townsfolk. They kind of have like a shimmer around them and like a kind of a black smoke that pours out. They're weak to direct light, but they're not like horribly mutated. The Hiss does a hell of a lot more damage to the human body and confers much more dramatic powers onto their victims. Like some of them are just like peeled apart, open monsters that can just like shoot out debris that they suck out of the floor sort of thing. So, and then of course Hartman is a big spider monster. So, the director, or at least the soon-to-be director, Ati, and then a couple others seem to be completely immune to this because they don't actually get mutated. So Ati, Trench and the player character Jesse Faden do not wear HRAs.
Oh, isn't that
so Jesse? When you play as Jesse, she does not need an HRA, and then Ahti is powerful enough to just avoid the Hiss corruption entirely.
Okay.
Trench was corrupted by the Hiss, and then it kind of made him afraid and paranoid that Hedron would try and take over and control the oldest house. So he then used the slide projector to just unleash the Hiss into the oldest house. It was just like, oh yeah, man, if you let me in, I'll take care of everything. Don't worry. I know you're afraid that this is going to get out of control. Believe me, that big thing that hasn't done anything wrong thus far is just waiting. Let me come in and fuck everything up immediately. So Hedron, sensing the danger and having some kind of connection to Jesse Faden through Polaris, probably, reached out to her and led her to the oldest house, which allowed her to find it and go in. And then here she ends up acquiring the service weapon. She kills Trench with it and becomes the new director of the FBC, which is such a weird part of this game because everybody just accepts it. They're like, oh, you've got the weapon, you're the new director. And then when you walk around the oldest house, which again is infinitely huge, all of the official pictures is pictures of Jesse. Like, the photos were automatically replaced.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's AWE.
Cool.
Very
cool. Sounds like not a lot of people want to be the leader there. Because if you just act like you want to be the leader a little bit, it seems like everyone just respects that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Must be a shitty job.
Well, you got the gun and you have the pyramid hat, right? So kind of conveys a sense of importance.
Yep. The acting is kind of strange, but I think the actress's name is Courtney Hope, plays Jesse, and she does a great job. Generally speaking, Remedy seems to like kind of strange-looking people. So, like, the actor who plays Alan Wake is kind of a weird-looking guy, and his outfit is so fucking stupid. He has a tweed jacket over, like, a classic button-up lumberjack shirt over a hoodie. Like, he looks just like a sleeping bag. Like, so warm.
You gotta layer up.
And Courtney Hope has a kind of a weird underbite, and all the other characters are all very odd looking. So it's a very strange game, which might like put some people off, but I loved Control. It was so, so good and very much recommend it.
Cool. Awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening, everybody. This has been another episode of The Lore Boys. If you like us, please tell your friends, leave us a review. It's like the super number one best way you can help us out. If you want to get in touch with me, you can do so at Ethan the Dead Man on Twitter. James, where can we find you?
You can find me at hotmail.com.
Just go there, search James, you'll get him. Peter, where can we find you?
At Loreboys Podcast on Instagram, along with Jamie. If you want to go to theloreboys.com/about and jump into the Discord to hang out, you can do that. Or you can email us directly, loreboyspodcast@gmail.com. And I believe we got a couple of folks here.
Okay, I was going to say we do, but we're running really long, so we'll read them on a future episode. Thanks so much for sending them to us, guys. Yeah, like Peter said, contact@loreboys.com is a great way to get in touch with us. Also, the Discord, if you go to loreboys.com/about, you can find the links to our Discord there. And come join the conversation. There's lots of people hanging out, doing good things, making suggestions for what you want us to talk about. You can tell me to do Trombone Clam in the case of the Janitor Gravy Face lore one of these days. So hop on over, come say hi. We'd love to hear from you guys. If you want to support the show financially, we do have a Patreon, patreon.com/theloreboys. We just, you know, finally did our top tier D&D game with one of our patrons this past weekend. It was a lot of fun. Thanks so much. Shout out to you, Terry. Everybody else who supports us on Patreon, thanks so much for your guys' monetary support. It really means a lot. It means it's not a financial drain to do this show that we love. If you don't trust Patreon, of course, we do always have Lore Boys Prime, which we already kind of alluded to. We are looking for sealed jars, specifically, of ancient honey. Anything over 2,000 years old honey preserved well. In return, you're not getting nothing, of course. For everyone who sends us a jar of ancient preserved honey, I will send you guys a copy of my book of scuba diving pickup lines. Now this is something that I did just start writing, so I don't know when it's going to be done, but it's got such great grates as, are you a depleted O2 tank? Because I want to put you in my mouth and choke myself. looking at you is like getting nitrogen poisoning. It makes me confused and want to dive deeper into a dark cave. and of course, are you back from the dead? Because I want to write a story and throw us back into the lake, into an alternate dimension for eternity.
Is your dad cursed? Because you're looking gravy.
And I think so send us your jars, and I will send you some jokes. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. I think that constitutes
a lore boys out.
Hi, I'm Ethan. I think let's go favorite SNES songs, or just general soundtracks if you can't think of a specific song. I'm gonna go with the athletic theme from Super Mario World, which I feel like might be a cop-out, but it's got to be an all-time great, right?
Guile's theme from Street Fighter.
Great choice.
Yeah. I like the victory music from Chrono Trigger.
That's, you know, good too. I might also say something from Mega Man X, maybe Storm Eagle.
Oh yeah. You know,
it's just Chrono Trigger is all about bass when you like, yeah. When it go into it, then yeah. Some guy in the bushes just starts fucking slapping away.
It's a pizza place, but I think there's I's in CC's.
Yeah, probably.
CC is a name.
It's also a locomotive classification.
Okay, guys. I think we should do a podcast. It's
also the name of a cat who was the first genetically cloned pet, and it stands for copycat. Isn't that cute? They cloned a cat and called it copycat.
That is super cute.
There's some bonus lore for the listeners who listen after the out credits. okay, Jamie. So it's also a Coburger convent.
The only C I care about now is control. So let's do this. Speaking of copycat, get the fuck out of here.
Stop. I think you mean control.
Control. Man. All right.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.